And like what I want to try and do is eventually describe how this relationship, how we can get this relationship out of physics in some way. But since this is a math physics seminar, I thought that maybe I would start by trying to describe the mathematical object that I'm trying to construct. And then once like I have described that object, then I'll try and describe like where it comes from physically. So the kind of object that I want to construct, and certainly like not, none of this will make sense, none of this notation will make sense right away, but I'll stop and define the various pieces of it in a minute. So I want to define some sort of infinity K category, where here K will be 2 or 3, which corresponds to Lagrangians inside of the point equipped with its 4-shifted symplectic structure. So that's probably something that I assume that nobody is familiar with, but I'll explain what this means. So the point is n-shifted symplectic for every n. And so this is some category whose objects are Lagrangians in the point. And then their morphisms will be Lagrangians between intersections of Lagrangians in the point, and so on and so on. I'll give a rigorous definition of this category in a second. And inside of it, there's a special subcategory, which I'll call MTK. So this M and T is for Moore and Tachikawa, who described this TQF, who described a similar sort of category in their work on a 2D TQFT valued in field theories. So this the two category, the K equals 2 version of this category was the target of the TQFT that they built in this talk. And I want to build a certain functor from this 2 or 3 category, whatever it is, when K is equal to 2, I want this functor to land inside of the infinity 2 category of DG categories. And when K is equal to 3, there's no good notation for this category. So sometimes people call this the category of 2 vector spaces. And so I'll just call this thing 3 vect. And I'll explain like what it is later. So I want to try and
connect it, totally not using the same like historically correct language. I mean, they're perfectly good terms, but the term 2 vector was already taken in the 90s for a much more basic notion.
2DG. Or 2 chain complexes. So none of this should make any sense whatsoever, but I hope that by the end of the talk, I'll be able to tell you a little bit about what this category is, what the subcategory is, and a little bit about what this functor is, and hopefully like how this thing relates to geometric Langlands, maybe to give you some tiny bit of a hint about how that might be true. So one example of a Lagrangian Lagrangians in a point and then with its 4-shifted symplectic structure are the same thing as 3-shifted symplectic manifolds. And one such example is the 3-shifted cotangent bundle of BG, where G is some algebraic group. And I can tell, and so this is a particular object in both versions of this category. And I'll at least tell you like where it's going to go in each of these two examples. And I made a small mistake. I'm actually going to construct two of these functors. Or actually really two families of functors. So when k is equal to, and I'll call the two families a and b, when k is equal to 2 is when I'll actually be constructing a family, and the other thing that this thing will depend on is a closed, is a proper curve, is a closed smooth curve. So I'll get one, so basically I'll get for each choice of a and b, so when k is equal to 2, for each choice of a and b, and for each smooth closed curve, I'll construct a functor. So I'll call these, I won't name them. And then when k is equal to 3, they'll actually only be two functors, and my analog of a curve will be the punctured disk. And so where this thing is supposed to go is that when k is equal to 2, and I'm looking at the A twist, then this thing should go to the category of D modules on bungee of my curve. In the B twist, it should go to the category of incoherent sheaves on flat G of my curve. And then when k is equal to 3, it's just going to go to some enhanced versions of these things. So it's going to go to sheaves of DG categories over bungee of the punctured disk DeRum, and in the B twist, it'll go to sheaves of categories over flat G. So at least I've told you what's going to happen on objects. And if you've ever heard anything about the geometric Langlands correspondence, you might know that it predicts an equivalence between D modules on bungee of a curve and incoherent sheaves on flat G for the Langlands dual group of the same curve. So one thing that we should expect to have acting on this more Tachikawa category is some sort of an involution, which I'll call S, which swaps the A and B. Although, I don't think anybody has any idea how to completely build this involution. Like, I know where it should send certain things, but I don't know as a general recipe. Or if I can figure out what one object was, I can build this functor, but there's just an object that I don't understand. And so since I don't understand that one object, I can't build this. Okay, so now let me go ahead and start to describe a little bit about this. So the first thing that I need to do is explain what the hell is this category. So then I can explain what the hell this category is. And then once I explain what the hell this category is, then I can start explaining how you can build these two functors. Okay, and probably before I can explain this, I should explain what this means. So I want to start off with a short introduction to n-shifted symplectic geometry. Okay, and the fundamental place where n-shifted symplectic geometry comes from is it's basically just one elaboration on the following observation, and that is that if X is like some sort of an Artin stack, or just is just some stack, then the tangent sheaf to X is actually not a sheaf, it's actually a complex of sheaves. And once like you realize that, you find that there's like a lot of freedom in symplectic geometry, which you've never used before. So let me like just try and give you some examples of like where on earth like this, what on earth this observation comes from. So let me just, I'm not gonna try and define like what the tangent complex is, but let me just like show you some examples of some stacks and like why would they're tangent complexes and why would we believe that's what the tangent complex is. So let's think about, suppose that I have some G acting freely on some space X, or some space Y, sorry, that's what it's supposed to be. And then suppose that my X is actually the quotient. And right now, because I have assumed that this is a nice free action, then like this is actually just another space. But let's try and figure out like what would we think that the tangent complex of some point x would be in this quotient. Well, one way that you could compute what the tangent space is you could pick a lift of this point. So suppose that this point x is the lift, so it has a lift to some point y instead of y, then you could pick the tangent complex of y, and that has a natural action now coming from the Lie algebra of g. You have your infinitesimal action, and the and let me put this in degree 0, and this is in degree minus 1. And if you were to take the homology of this complex, well, since I've assumed that this thing's acting freely, this is actually an injection. And you would find one guess that you might make for your tangent complex is that it's actually just this quotient. So basically what you've done is you've looked at the action of your group on your space, and you have all these infinitesimal vector fields, say like going in like this direction, and you're saying like, oh, if I just mod out by that direction, then like, that should give me the tangent space for my quotient, which should be something like this. And that's like what your definition would be for a free action. And if my action was not free, and then I had to make this thing be a quotient stack, then I should just leave this as my definition of the tangent complex, but now this thing won't be injective anymore, and so I might end up with cohomology of degree minus 1. In particular, when y is equal to a point, and then you're looking at your quotient would be the stack vg, then your entire tangent complex would be a copy of g sitting in degree minus 1. Okay. So you notice that like in this case, like you see that the tangent complex is just no longer, it's just no longer a single sheaf. It's a complex. Okay, but there's one other place where things can come from. So like one place where you get interesting tangent complexes is when you take a quotient. The other place you can get an interesting tangent complex is when you take an intersection. And so, for example, if you had two guys sitting inside of some ambient space, and then you took their intersection, one could try and compute the tangent complex for this guy. So let me right now just assume that these things are actually transverse. Then in this case, you would compute the tangent complex. Let me just call this thing Z. You compute the tangent complex of Z in the following way. So let me call this inclusion I1, this inclusion I2. You could take I1 star of the tangent complex for x1 plus I2 star of the tangent complex for x2. And then now both of these maps, or then now you can pull back along this inclusion, so let me just call this name J. And then you could pull back the tangent complex from x0 along this inclusion, and it includes sort of diagonally into here. And if this thing were transverse, then you would, so let me put this in degree minus 1 and this in degree 0. If this thing were transverse, then what you would say the tangent space was would just be the cohomology of this complex. Like this would give you your normal computation of what the tangent space should look like. I think these guys should have been appearing in the other way. Yeah. This thing should have been. So these guys should be appearing here. This thing should be kernel. The single transverse, this would be surjective, and you'd get no cohomology. So being every one is 0, sorry. And if these things are not transverse, then this is what I'll take as my definition. So the point is that like now your tangent complex is no longer just a sheaf. And so now that means that like a symplectic form, it's like one thing that a symplectic form gives you second, but the classical definition that you would say is it's a closed two-form omega that induces an iso between the tangent complex on x and the cotangent complex. And if things were in degree 0, like if this thing were really just a single sheaf, like this would be your only option. But if you're like in this context, your tangent complex is in degree minus 1, so your cotangent complex would be in degree 1, and then you could ask for things to be isomorphic, like up to a shift. And so then you can define an n-shifted symplectic structure. Is a closed two-form that induces an iso between omega and this thing shifted by n. Okay, so there's one small additional piece of data. I need to like actually say a little bit more about what a closed two-form means, like in this context. So your Durand complex is just the symmetric algebra on the functions of x on the cotangent complex shifted down in degree by 1. And this thing has two different gradings. It has a weight, which is coming from the symmetric algebra, and then it has a degree coming from the fact that this thing is a chain complex. And then it actually has two different differentials. So it has d, which is weight 1 and degree 0. And then this thing might have its own internal differential, which would be of degree, which would be of weight 0. Sorry, did I do these? No, sorry. Weight 0 and degree 1. And now let's like see like what it actually means for like a two-form to be closed. I guess the other thing is that before, like your two forms could only live in like one degree, but now they could live in like lots of different degrees. But now suppose I've got some element of the part of my Durand complex of degree I and weight k. Actually, sorry, let me just do 2 since I'm gonna be doing, since I'm actually gonna be interested in the symplectic form. And actually I guess to match this, let me call that. This is like my symplectic form. So now, if I take D of this thing, then this will put me inside of the Durham complex for weight 3 in degree n. But then now dW might not be 0, but it might actually be true that you can find an element in the Durham complex in weight n minus 1, such that when you take del of that element, so let me call this guy omega 0, I might be able to find some omega 1 in here, such that when I do del, I hit this. But then now, this thing might have some interesting d. And then I would have to hunt for an omega 2 that kills that, and so on and so on. And so like being closed is actually the data of this omega 1, so this omega 0, this omega 1, this omega 2, and so on and so on. You can summarize this as you can take the product as of I equals 0 to infinity of dr n plus I. You take this complex, and then you could just hunt for cocycles with respect to this combined differential.
Do you mean to have two there at every point?
Because it, And then maybe because of the way, I think people usually split this grading around, so I put it like this. So I wasn't very careful about what my sign conventions were gonna be. And so you get this thing, and if you look for something that's a closed in the ordinary sense under this differential, that'll be the definition of a closed two form. And of course, this thing has a projection out the Durham complex in degree 2 plus I in degree, sorry. And this is the underlying two form map. So basically, your closed two form has an underlying two form, but it's more data on top of just a two form. Okay, but anyway, so if once you make sense of like keeping track of these things, then this n-shifted symplectic geometry is just like some new kind of symplectic geometry that you get because these tangent complexes can be in an interesting degree, and then now being closed is data, not, or sorry, structure, not property. The nice thing about this is that closed forms behave better in derived symplectic geometry. Like when you integrate a closed form against some class, like it'll stay closed. Whereas like that's not easy to prove, like in the classical sense. And so there's like a lot of things that people used to do that were hard that become easy once you just carry the data around all the time. But then you have to like make all your machines carry the data around all the time.
Are you also gonna tell us how to find an isomorphism between tangent complex?
Oh yeah. I mean that's the same.
Okay.
Like you just use your underlying two form. Like it gives you like just through the exact same procedure, it gives you a pairing map like this.
Okay.
And then you can just ask whether it's an isomorphism, and that's still a property. So that's easy. That's no harder than it was before. Okay, and then now let me try and define one other thing. So now I just need to tell you what a Lagrangian becomes in this setting. So now suppose I've got and it's actually like kind of handy to do the following thing. So basically, it turns out that you can just, that this thing satisfies the right kind of descent conditions to have a classifying space. So basically, there's some space, which I'll call Durham 2 closed. Such that a map into this space is just the same thing as a two form. So such that maps from X to this space is equal to the closed two forms of degree K on X. I mean, basically you define the space through this definition and then you prove that like it satisfies the right conditions to be it to be achieved. It's just going to be handy for a second to write this as a map. Like, you'll see why when I do things in a second. So, like, basically, like, when I have a two form, I write it like this. And you'll see why this is useful when I turn it
around. Is there some reasonable way to think about this in classical geometry?
Yeah. How classical? So you can do it in C infinity geometry if you're willing to have stacks.
Okay. It's sort of a stacky thing.
Yeah, it's a stacky thing. And even an infinity stacky thing. But there's a nice paper by Fried and Hopkins where they basically talk about like how to talk about Chern-Weigh as like computing like the Durand cohomology of like some stack that classifies bundles with a flat connection and showing that it's really just symmetric polynomials. It's basically like it doesn't tell you anything you didn't already know, but it's a really nice exercise with the machinery and sort of like what it tells you.
There was a tautologous thing, which was that if the data of a closed two form is a local thing, so it must be a stack that presents it for some definition of stack.
Right.
And then the hard work is to figure out how nice of a stack it is.
Yeah, and I'm not making any claims that it's a nice stack. Like, I just want to write things as maps. Okay, so now let's suppose that I have L mapping into some symplectic thing X. So classically, L is coisotropic if I star of omega equals zero. In this world, this thing will be symplectic if
isotropic.
Huh?
I think that's called isotropic.
Oh, so that's isotropic, sorry. Yeah. If I star omega is homotopic to zero. And the way that I like to write this is you've got L mapping to X, mapping to your one form. And then this thing would be I star omega, and then you can write in, I guess this composition is I star omega, but then you can factor this map through zero, and then this thing would be two morphism like that. It just makes it handy to keep track of like the homotopies in these pictures. So that's why I like to draw things this way. It's because then when you're drawing big diagrams and you're composing lots of homotopies, you can actually see them in your picture in sort of a nice way, and it makes it easier to keep track.
So now it matters that you put two and not two closed. Which did you want?
Two closed.
I think I want two closed, right?
I mean, I don't know what you want. They're different.
I think, Phil, the definition's for two closed, right? Like when you want something to be Lagrangian, you want it to be homotopic in the space of closed ones. That's what I thought. All right. So that's the only difference. You just have to keep, so to be coisotropic, you just have to keep track of this isomorphism. And then to be Lagrangian, once you have something like this, it induces a map from the tangent space of, cotangent space of L to the tangent space of X. So this data induces some map of that, and something's Lagrangian if this is an isomorphism. And that condition just goes on in the ordinary sense. Okay, so then now let me tell you one fact about symplectic, or some facts about Lagrangians that I'm going to need in order to define this, my target, or say my source category. And so the first fact is that the point is Lagrangian for any, or sorry, is n-shifted symplectic for any n. And if you have a Lagrangian in here, this is the same, this thing is equivalent to just saying that L is n minus 1 shifted symplectic. So that's one thing. The other thing, and maybe the big application of all this symplectic, shifted symplectic geometry business, is if I have two Lagrangians in the same space, I can form their intersection. And it turns out that, so if this thing is n shifted symplectic, it turns out that this thing is n minus 1 shifted symplectic. But let me try and tell you just a tiny bit about why that's true, although I won't go through the whole proof.
It basically comes down to keeping track of these homotopies.
So let's try and do this. So I have my closed two forms, degree n. And I have this map from x. And then now I have these two different Lagrangians. And then now I've got some homotopies between them. Let's call them alpha. And let me actually write this one in the opposite way. So I'm going to use minus beta, or beta inverse. I'm going to use the inverse path. So these things are both factoring from 0, right?
Basically, I just turned my homotopy around so they would go in the same direction.
And then inside of here, you've got this guy. And part of the data of being a derived pullback is actually that you have to give a morphism making the square, like commute. Like you have to give a two morphism making the square commute.
And so, like basically, when you put all of these homotopies together, I end up getting a loop around zero inside of this space.
And it turns out that like that a loop around zero is the same thing as a form of one more degree. Like it's just some. And so that ends up being like the key computation. And so this thing ends up giving a form of one more degree. But the hard part of this is you have to keep track of these three pieces of data in order to write down.
Okay, so that's one of these things. Okay, now I can define this bizarre stack.
Or sorry, this bizarre n category. So let me define a category Lagrange. So let x be shifted symplectic, or n shifted symplectic for any n. So now I want to define a category by induction. So let me define Lagrangian infinity zero inside of x. This thing is going to be an infinity zero category. So that means it just has only isomorphisms in it. And its objects are just Lagrangians inside of X. And then the morphisms are isomorphisms. That's step one.
So
because these things are like have chain complexes as their mm-hmm. functions, there's like lots of higher mm-hmm. like data in the mapping spaces. Mm-hmm. Okay. So basically, I'm just not telling you like what the two morphisms are actually like these sorts of things I've been drawing here, mm-hmm. and then there's more and more, but I just don't want to. But you can always take an infinity category, an infinity k category, and truncate it to get just an ordinary k category. And so I'm just telling you the underlying groupoid that would be in here. Okay, so then now I want to define Lagrangian of infinity n inside of x by the following. So the objects here are going to be Lagrangians inside of X again. But then now I want to change my Hom spaces. So now my Hom spaces between two Lagrangians, L1 and L2, is going to be the infinity n minus 1 category of Lagrangians in L1 crossed with L2 over X. And this thing is n minus 1, should be something like that. By the theorem I just told you a second ago. It doesn't make sense to talk about Lagrangians in that. And then now, like, I can just iterate this thing for any n. This thing should be k. These should have nothing to do with one another. These numbers.
Though, so you don't run into any trouble once you go past like minus one shifted symplectic?
No. Usually people like to stop it out at minus one because then it's easy to linearize the category. So you notice that this thing doesn't have, its Hom spaces are not vector spaces. Or sorry, its top level Homs are not like chain complexes. And so like the minus one guys have a really nice way of turning things into chain complexes. And so that's why that's kind of like the one of interest. It's also the most interesting in classical symplectic geometry. Like if you did zero shifted things and you built the two category, then you would end up with minus one at the top, and that is something that appeared classically. But these other ones, you can make all these other ones, they're just not as. So anyway, so then I built this guy. So I told you that the point can be symplectic with any shifted symplectic structure. I've told you how to make this Lagrangian category, so I've told you what this guy is. And in particular, its objects, by this thing that I told you here about Lagrangians and the point, its objects are really just three shifted symplectic things. And then the morphisms between them are Lagrangian correspondences. And then the morphisms between those are Lagrangians inside of intersections of those Lagrangian correspondences, which will be Lagrangians in two shifted things, and so on and so on and so on. So that's what this guy is. And then this guy is really easy to define once I've defined that guy. I just take the full subcategory spanned by all the T star three of BGs. What?
It's a terrible category.
What is it so bad?
If I'm wandering through the world and I wander across the symplectic manifolds, it's hard to figure out if it's T star of something.
That's true. Yeah.
So sorry, wait, what is G ranging over?
Yeah.
I wanted to just say inductive groups, but I'm going to want to allow some nilpotent groups for like intermediate objects, even though nobody cares about them. I just want to allow this thing to just be finite dimensional algebraic groups.
This is a very strange category to consider, like, because, you know, as I said, like, it can be hard to figure out if something's T-star of something, and it might be T-star of something in multiple ways. I see no reason why there would be any good reason to restrict it myself to, like, things that look like BG. I mean, why not use arbitrary,
text? So the reason is that, what you should think of is that this category, you should think of its objects as being, like, some sort of four-dimensional field theories. And I am restricting to all the ones that are going to come that are going to show up in geometric languages. Basically, I'm just restricting to like all of the geometric Langlands guys. So like basically, I'm not interested in all field theories. Like this isn't a story about all field theories in dimension four. It's a theory. It's a story about 4D super Yang Mills. 4D n equals 4 super Yang Mills and 3D n equals 4. And these are the things that show up. These are the relevant target spaces that you use to build that. So that's why. Like, it's not like, I mean, so it's because, like, I've decided I'm not interested in all field theories. I'm only interested in these.
But you're still taking the full set.
I mean, would you prefer that I, like, really just pick T star 3 BG?
Like, why, I mean, given your beautiful inductive definition of Lagrangian blah blah blah,
yeah.
I would have expected if you're going to restrict the classes of objects you're going to consider, then it would be very reasonable to restrict the class of morphisms in some analogous way.
Yeah, it turns out though that those will actually give interfaces between.
Sure, because any object upstairs should presumably give a 4D theory. Maybe with some extra kind of quantization data.
Yeah, I mean you're right. Like it might be true that the right thing to do is to restrict these as well. But I don't know of a good way to do it.
And you have some reason to believe that your functors A and B don't extend to all 4D theories?
No, I think they would work just fine. Right? Like if you had any, like some three-shifted symplectic manifold and you took maps and did geometric quantization, it would work. Yeah, so the things I'm gonna define maybe like are like pretty easy to define already, but I just don't have any reason for S-duality to act. Like I don't know how to define, like I already barely know how to define this. It's gonna work by doing Langlands dual. Like even if I wanted to find this, I'd probably restrict only to the reductive guys. And then like I would make this automorphism on objects be Langlands duality. And then like I have literally no idea what that would be here.
So you do have S.
Yeah.
Well, I mean
I don't know what the Langlands, what generality does the Langlands dual make sense? But yeah. And what about subgroups of reductive groups? Like if I take like a parabolic, like is there a Langlands dual parabolic?
Yeah.
So it's a little bit more than reductive groups.
I mean, I have no idea whether that's the right thing, but.
I think if you have a parabolic in a reductive, then I think you get a dual parabolic in the dual reductive, right?
Yeah.
But that's not something that happened like, parabolics are as abstract groups, they're solvable groups. You don't get to take the Langlands dual of that abstract solvable group.
Okay. Yeah, so maybe let me say this. When I want to do this S, I'm going to want to restrict this even further to just the reductive groups.
Okay. Well, then I'm still going to be dubious that you have a recognition principle. Like, I don't know why if I wander across a symplectic manifold, why couldn't it arise as T star 3 BG in different ways?
I mean, T star 3 BG is pretty rigid, right? I mean, like...
Maybe.
I mean, maybe... Like, I don't even think you could write this as a cotangent bundle.
Can I ask this
more?
Yeah. You said tangent complex to BG was just Lie algebra sitting in degree negative 1?
That's right.
This is G-dual?
Yeah, so this one's going to be G-dual. And then it would have been sitting in degree 1, like if it was just the cotangent bundle to BG, and then I'm going to shift it down by 3.
Okay.
So it's going to be in degree minus 2. So this thing is by definition G dual shifted by minus 2 on G. Okay. So yeah, maybe this isn't like the best possible way of saying this. And like really, like I want when I'm constructing these functors, sometimes as intermediates, I'll want to do things where this S doesn't make sense. I'll just want to use arbitrary. Like I'll want to use things like a parabolic or like a unipotent group. But then like when I actually like, and it's okay for constructing these functors, but when I talk about this duality, it's not gonna be defined.
So, why did you model it by G? You didn't do that earlier.
What do you mean? No, because BG is point of G. Sorry. This isn't the tangent complex. This is the whole space.
Oh.
The tangent complex itself is like, looks like G star and G in some degrees with with the edge-main action connected.
Oh, okay.
Like
yeah,
that,
sorry.
At least that's the fiber of the
sorry.
Of the tangent complex.
Okay, good. Cool, thanks. So this is coordinate orbit.
That's right, except for the only things that you can have here need to be conical, and I guess co-adjoint orbits are. But like you like the only sub things that you can have in this G dual shifted by minus two have to be subs that are compatible with this weight.
Only for stupid degree reasons.
But those are really important.
Very important, yet also stupid degree reasons.
Yeah, somehow, like, sometimes I'm gonna need a C star action to make something live in here in some reasonable way, and that's gonna have interesting properties, like problems on this. Okay, so that's the first bit, so at least now you know what the source category.
The comment about stupid reasons, if you wanna say I want a C star action, then all of my complaints will evaporate, because mm-hmm. there's somehow that'll like take care of everything. But you know, this is like, you should think of this more like coadjoint orbits. There's the only actual subs are going to be conical, but I bet you can write down somehow derived like families of subobjects, parameter, you know, derived families of subobjects whose kind of that don't look conical.
Yeah, probably. I mean, yeah, if you have a parameter of an interesting degree,
yeah.
You can do that. Okay, so let me now tell you one other thing that's just its symplectic geometry and make it like a general fact, and then something that's supposed to and like maybe historically the first original, well, this intersection thing was one of the main interesting things. And then the second one is this thing which people call the AKSZ construction. So for this, I'm going to just restrict myself to the generality in which that I actually need, although there are, So let's C be, it's going to be a curve later, but it doesn't have to be right now. And let this thing be homologically proper. Let me just make it proper, so I don't have this, which is stronger, so I don't worry about anything. This isn't quite good enough, but I don't want to say the real definition. Roughly, like what this means is that the global sections of the structure sheaf are the global structure sheaf. It's not quite right, but it's enough. Then the data of an orientation is of degree k, or I guess it's used to degree l, is a map. Shifted to live in degree l. I'm not 100% sure of what I wanted my convention to be. And I'm going to elide the property that it needs to satisfy, just because I'd like to get something a little bit more interesting. But let me try and tell you get some examples. So one example is that C is a Clavier. Of degree L. Then you have an isomorphism between the chains coefficients in the structure sheet and the chains coefficients in the dualizing sheaf, but then because this thing is a Clavier degree L,
there will be some sort of a shift here. Or, sorry, no. It's cloudy out, this will be dimensional. But you have a cloudy out, these two things will be isomorphic, but then you have a trace pairing, which will take you to C shifted cloudy. So that's like one canonical example of such a thing. The second example is if you have C Durand. So this thing, so here, your chains of C Durand with the values in the structure sheet of C Durand is just the Durand homology of C, with the Durand homology of C. And then if this thing is actually compact and oriented, then you'll have just an integration map. Like if you choose a fundamental class, then you'll get a orientation V minus L, where L is the dimension of your space. And I guess that there's the same thing if you do C Dolbo. He has the same sort of property. But now this thing is the Dolbo cohomology, the degree zero Dolbo cohomology. And then similarly, so this thing is always, as long as this thing is proper, there's always also an orientation degree itself, which is also just integration against the fundamental class. Okay, so the big theorem that people wanted to prove, or have proved, is that if C is oriented of dimension L, and X is n-shifted symplectic, then maps from C, so C can be like any of these C Durands or C Dolbo or any of these things I've seen before, into X is n minus d. And the proof basically goes as follows. You basically have your map, you have a map like this. And basically, you can take forms, pull them back, and integrate. And like you'll notice that because, like for example, in this, and it turns out that this will not change the degree, the weight of your form, but it will change the degree. And because you defined being closed to be a property, like you can prove that this integration maps and closed things to closed things. And so this thing will still have a closed form. And then like you need, then basically there was a certain non-degeneracy property here that's sort of like dual to being Lagrangian, which lets me know that thing stays in one thing. Like, and not just coisotropic. Or say not just coisotropic, not just, it didn't have just a degenerate. Okay, so that's like the big thing, and there's like a similar versions of this that like work if you have like sections of a bundle, like you can sort of play these same kind of games, like just sort of, I'm gonna need these things now. Okay, so let me now start defining the beginning of this functor. So the first part of this is actually like really easy. It's just going to be given by this AKS construction. And like this thing is actually really nice, like it sends Lagrangians to Lagrangians, sends fiber products to fiber products, so like it behaves really, really nicely. So let me just put myself in the global context for a minute, where this k is equal to 2, and I have a global curve. Then my first step in constructing this functor is, depending on whether I want to do the a or the b, I guess actually these are both going to land in the exact same spot, is that you're in the a twist, you're supposed to do maps from C and then there's actually like something a little bit complicated about this, is the way that this thing is supposed to work. I want to just put a Durham out here, but I haven't literally told you that that's a thing that actually works. In order to like keep things being symplectic. The real thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to put a dull bow here and then do some sort of fancy deformation, but I just want to leave that alone. This is like a pretty good approximation. And in the B twist, I want to do maps from C to wrong, which is something. And in either case, these things are going to land in the following category. They're going to land in Lagrangians. Now, this one's going to be infinity 2 as well. But the symplectic, these things were Lagrangians inside the point before, the point with its four-shifted symplectic structure. But since I'm mapping out of something of dimension 2, or so these curves are, like, are all as real manifolds sort of dimension 2. And so this thing is going to drop the symplectic form degree. So this is like the beginning of like the A twist and the B twist. And then there's the part of this story which is the fuzziest and the part that like still needs a lot of working out. But then now there's a functor that I want to call geometric quantization, which I'll start to explain to you in a second, which is going to take me to DG cat. And then either of these two compositions will be the functors that we're looking at. So let me tell you a few words about like the way that shifted geometric quantization is. So basically, like the majority of the stuff that we have to do is show that we can. Well, one, I don't truly believe that right now the technology to define geometric quantization on this entire, like on all of these Lagrangians exists. Like basically, like I only really know what to do if I actually have like some Lagrangian vibrations around. Sorry, if I have a Lagrangian and I have like a certain kind of vibrational structure on it, and like there's like lots of restrictions on like what I need. Also, there's actually an extra step in here, which is called the pre-quantization, which is going to send me to a more elaborate version of this category. That like basically it's going to be Lagrangians plus like some extra data that you need in order to do this geometric quantization. And like right now we're still in the process of deciding exactly like how much data we need here. So one thing that you definitely do need is you're going to need some classes in Galilean cohomology. Which are going to give you some gerbs that you have to sort of carry around. So basically in the physics literature, these things go by the name of the theta angle.
Sorry, what is Galilean cohomology?
So it's basically a differential refinement of cohomology with coefficients in the uniform. So basically like that, so differential cohomology, so the cohomology with coefficients in U1 basically sort of just gives you like U1 bundles, but this thing is going to classify U1 bundles with connection. And like basically it's the cohomology of just a complex where it starts with like a copy of Z, twisted by some amount, and you're going to go, this is just like Hodge. And then it goes to omega 1, and then it goes to omega 0, this to omega 1, and then you want to take this complex and take its homology.
So, you know, I only really know about geometric quantization for, like, actual...
Yeah, so that's what I want to start telling you. Oh, but anyway, you can ask. But
well, I was just going to say, like, why should this be functorial, right? Like, the whole problem with geometric quantization is it's not functorial.
Functorial interlocked.
Exactly.
Yeah. right. So the functorality that we're hoping that it'll have is a functorality under composition of Lagrangian correspondence.
That's not going to happen. I mean, just because it doesn't happen in the classical case. It might happen like if you restrict your MTK to a much smaller category. Like if you don't use all Lagrangians, you already restricted your objects very.
And I said that like at the moment we only know how to like do this for like a smaller class of Lagrangians and show that it can be used for a smaller class of Lagrangians.
And I mean, it might be that all you care about are like cotangent bundles and conormals and so on, and like you know how to quantize a cotangent bundle.
Yeah, but we know that we don't. So like we know that like we care about slightly larger class conormal bundles and graphs of one forms. So the majority of like what we need to build is for like what we're in the process of building is for like how to handle the graphs of one forms. That's kind of like so basically for cotangent bundle. So let me say a little bit about like the way this works. And like he's saying, it's basically trivial for cotangent bundles and conormal bundles, minus keeping track of this gerb.
The fact that there's extra degree shifts doesn't change the fact that you already know how to quantize.
Yeah, but I'll tell you a little bit about what it is. But the hard part is handling the twisting potential bundles. And those are kind of important for the applications. Like those are kind of the ones that are not understood.
Espresso?
Yeah, it's true. It is after 3, so.
Well, maybe just give me like 3 more minutes, and then we can just stop for good.
Okay.
And then I won't talk about the
you know,
one.
If anybody needs to pee, they can go pee.
Then hold on for 3 minutes.
Yeah. Let me just tell you one thing about geometric quantization. That's actually like it's not true that like it's not expected to commute. I mean, like that's the way that you construct, like actually the way that you construct field theories is sort of like a dual to this procedure, where instead of keeping my target fixed and then like instead of keeping my curve fixed and then varying my target, you keep your target fixed and vary your manifold.
Yeah, if I choose a pre-quantum data, if I choose like all the geometric quantization data once and for all,
that's what we're gonna do.
Then on X.
Yeah.
Then at least the B twist, I know how that commutes with.
Yes. So basically, we can fix all the geometric quantization data once and for all. Or sorry, we can fix all of the. There's the polarization and the pre-quantum line bundle. We can fix once and for all. Basically, once you pick one class in Deligne cohomology here, and then this Deligne cohomology, you can basically do the same integral construction to transgress these Deligne cohomology classes in the same way I transgress my form. And then you can also show, like through a similar argument by keeping track of these homotopies, that when you intersect things, you can like drop, that you can get Deligne cohomology data of like, lower degree. And like that's like all very easy. The hard part is the polarizations.
No, you already told us AKSC took Lagrangians to Lagrangians.
Yeah, I told you AKZ takes Lagrangians to Lagrangians. I didn't tell you about what happens to the polarization.
That's just a Lagrangian.
Or sorry, to the pre-quantization.
You just told us that the pre-quantum line bundle transgresses and the polarization.
No, sure, but then I would need to choose them all here. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Well, I think, like, I understand. I mean, I have no objection, at least for the B-twist, and maybe the A-twist also does that at the level of field theories. It's the level of, like, handling arbitrary Lagrangians that do this.
Okay. I mean, that's fair. I mean, we only really claim the handle shifted, conormal bundles and graphs of morphisms. And like for like the physically interesting examples, that's all you need. So like all of like the field theories that like Ben or like Sober studies, those all come from conormal bundles. Or he would say cotangent bundle, but the way that they've been encoded here is conormal bundles. And then there's some other guys, like the NOMPOL, or like the Slotowy slice and various things, which you can write as twisted as a composition of a graph of a function in a one form. And sorry, in the graph of a one form. And those are the ones that are kind of the more in the kind of one that we're. That's the place where there's actually something new. But I think also like just saying what exists cleanly is kind of nice. So the idea is like sort of the following. So if you have the cotangent bundle of X, as Theo was saying, the thing that you expect to get out of this is actually sections of functions on OX, although maybe I want to like twist it by half densities or something like that. But this is roughly like sort of like the answer to like what geometric quantization is supposed to give for a minus. And you notice that this thing is a vector space. For a minus one shifted cotangent bundle, you're actually just supposed to get a complex number. And it turns out that for a cotangent bundle, this number is always just a constant. It's basically one is a pretty good choice.
What
would
the other characters?
Sorry?
What if I could get the other characters to I'm getting one local
unit agreement appearance. Oh, no, sorry. You're. I was thinking of a Lagrangian in here. X is a Lagrangian, so yeah, you're right, sorry. Okay. So this thing ends up giving you a number. And there's sort of an expectation that at least when I don't have any interesting pre-quantum data, that like when you quantize this, you're just going to end up getting some sort of quasi-coherent sheaves or incoherent sheaves on the base. So there's basically a problem of functional analysis here. I think the thing that most people have done is IC, but we're sorry, QC, but we're trying to enhance it to do IC instead. So for at least for cotangent bundles, like this isn't particularly complicated. And for conormal bundles, this also isn't terribly complicated. So if you have a minus one, I don't know what, so basically there's an expectation that if you have a Lagrangian in one of these symplectic manifolds, then your Lagrangian should give you some element of this thing. But I don't know how to give an element of a number. So I'm going to start instead here. So if you have an ordinary conormal to X. Actually, this is already a little complicated to say, like what state exactly you get here. I mean, the easiest one is if you have the zero section. And then this would be what I said earlier, is if you get one sitting inside. If you had the graph of a one form, then you're supposed to get W. Sitting inside of here. And similarly, if you had something like a zero section in here, well, there's a perfectly good quasi-coherent sheaf, which is functions on that zero section. But this isn't like exactly like what we're trying to do. The thing that we're trying to do is make sense of kind of a recursive procedure for computing these geometric quantizations. And it works roughly in the following way. And then I'll let you go. So the idea is that, like, suppose that you have an n-shifted symplectic. Let me just let it You have some n-shifted symplectic manifold, and you have a Lagrangian inside. So part of the data of like being able to do a geometric quantization is you have to pick a polarization, which is supposed to be, which is supposed to be the data in order to, in order to quantize a symplectic manifold, you have to pick a polarization, which is supposed to be a Lagrangian vibration. And if you notice, this composition is actually a symplectic vibration. Of degree n minus 1. Because I told you before that if you have a Lagrangian and a symplectic manifold, and you intersect it with one of, well, if this thing is a Lagrangian vibration, then this fiber is a Lagrangian. If you intersect this fiber with this Lagrangian L, then you'll get something of symplectic degree 1 lower. And if you know how to do geometric quantization of these things in families, then like it'll tell you how to quantize this Lagrangian inside of X. And so basically, like what we're, but in order to do that, you need to pick the polarization of this thing as a family of symplectic manifolds, which would be some sort of a base over L that makes this sort of thing commute. And then you can sort of like try and like recursively do this geometric quantization. And this is kind of the thing that we're in the middle of working out. Okay, maybe here I'll stop.